Hi, this is Jacob Scher. Welcome to the Job Mob Podcast. Welcome to this Job Mob interview with an expert. Today's guest is Nat Gordon. Nat is Israel's best-known recruiter, specializing in jobs for English speakers. He actually founded his company, Marksman International Personnel, in 1982, a bit of time ago. In some of the highlights of this interview, this 68-minute interview, Nat looks back on the history of recruiting in Israel since then, since 1982, while also talking in detail about what it takes to find a job in Israel today and why it can be so frustrating for people who weren't born here. But he also talks about how to overcome that frustration. And there's also a lot of insight for people that are looking for jobs anywhere in the world. So this is a good listen for anybody out there in the job mob community, and I'm sure you'll enjoy it. Thanks for listening again. Today we're talking with Nat Gordon of Marksman International Personnel. Nat, thank you so much for being part of this interview with an expert, this job mob interview with an expert. I always like to start off by talking about who you are and give an idea to people that are listening and watching where what you've done for recruiting in Israel. So what can you tell us about yourself?
Right, I'm an immigrant from Scotland, new relatively. I came here in 1977, so I'm hardly new at all. But I still see myself as a new immigrant, as most new immigrants do feel themselves as new immigrants. It takes the second generation to actually know that they're totally Israeli. My children, who are also English speakers and bilingual, I don't think they're new immigrants, but I certainly am a new immigrant, and so I think I could still relate to new immigrants. In Scotland, I was in human resources. I had my own employment agency. When I came here, I decided that I would like to carry on the business. I then discovered that employment businesses in Israel were, to quote, full of snakes and charlatans, and that the only employment agencies that were legal were in fact temporary agencies. Why legal? Because actually employment in those days, and we're talking about 1977, to get a job, you had to go to the Lishkat Avodah. That's the government employment agency. Because in those days, Israel was still a socialist country, semi-socialist, who knows. But it had three components to the government. One was the Histadrut, the labor organization. One was the Labour Party, and the third was the government, and they all consisted of the same people. So they gave their friends jobs to run the employment business introduction. At some stage, you had to have a red card, a Mapai card, in order to get a job in some places. And that was, in fact, this actual legal case. So in private employment agencies, which we are, and which do exist today as well, never existed. And I was breaking the law to open up one. Anyway, my lawyer says, well, you know, this is Israel. Breaking the law is not the big thing. Nobody's got to worry about it. Why don't you do it? But it's difficult, morally, religiously, ethically. I came to live in Israel to break the law. Anyway, I did start up after working a while as an accountant to the Canadian Embassy, because that was my initial training. And after a short period of time, together with a lady called Elaine Kopp, now Elaine Levitt from Kidamin Personnel, we said, we're going to make this legal. And we did. We got together a group of employment agents in, I think, the Dan Hotel. And we said, we're going to get a law passed to make privatize it. Privatizing in those days, this was easier because Begin had just won and Likud were coming in, so privatization and actually being a capitalist was not such a dirty word.
Right.
And we somehow got this enacted, and we got a license to employ, to run a private employment agency. Not terribly well controlled, but with certain facts. One restriction is that the offices, everybody has to have an office.
This was back then?
That was back then, still relevant today.
Okay.
You can't just become a recruitment consultant officially in Israel unless you have an employment agency license. And to get one, first of all, you don't have, you know, the owner shouldn't have been in jail. Well, I suppose that cuts out half the population. Secondly, you have to have an office that is built in such a way that people with disabilities, wheelchairs,
accessible.
So you can see how this office is got lifts and is accessible. And there should be a private waiting area that people shouldn't meet with each other. That part of it I don't understand. But interviews have to be done privately, and you have to have a private interview room. Mm-hmm. And if you could see along here, we have actually two perfectly private interview rooms so the individuals can be interviewed properly. That was basically the criteria, no money involved. So that is, apart from the major restriction, is that you're not allowed to charge the employee looking for work mm-hmm. any fee. Well, I was used to that in England. The agencies I had, the laws was very few countries where you're allowed to charge a fee to the applicant. Though I understand in some parts of America, in those days, it still was relevant. And I don't know if there's any states in America that still permit the client, the applicant, to charge a fee. I think there must be, because one or two people that employ me from abroad say, I will pay you a fee if you can find me a job. And that's against the law. It raised a very interesting point, this particular law, which is still in existence, about charging applicants, is whether the job portals that have been established here, who actually charge their readers money in order to find out the identity of the jobs that are available, whether they in fact break this law. One or two of us have talked about doing something about it, but the laws on what job portals are probably quite different, and we've not done anything about it. But it's just out of interest. I think
is it applicable?
A person shouldn't, in a country that cares for full employment, mm-hmm. permit people to make money for people who are unfortunately, or not unfortunately, sometimes it's very fortunate that people are looking for jobs,
right,
or improving their jobs, but they shouldn't have directly to pay for it. And it's also illegal for agencies to wheedle money out of an applicant by giving them a course or giving them a personality test and charging them for it. Any form of that. Anyway, that's away from the subject of where I come from. So we started the employment agency, and I started it from my mother's balcony in Petah Tikva, then progressed to a little office in Petah Tikva, and then eventually progressed to a little office in Ben Yehuda Street in
Tel Aviv.
And then I was told that in Israel, employers were very sensitive what kind of office you work. We never seemed to get any big clients. So I took their advice and I opened up in Asia House, which was then the building in Israel owned by the Eisenbergs. And I got a one-room office, as big as this room, and not much bigger. And all of a sudden, I started getting big right. clients, and I was able to help, because that was my object, and it still really is today, is to help English speakers, new immigrants, but also not so new immigrants. Mm-hmm. New immigrants are more easy to satisfy, because they're being brainwashed correctly with the idea that they can take any job, and they often do, and it's their first job, so nobody's really worried about
right.
it, and it's not going to look bad on their CV if the first job was telemarketing, even though they've got a PhD in finance. And we tended and still do tend to find new immigrants with new vacancies that are their second vacancy or the third vacancy. So it's not surprising somebody's been in the country 5 or 10 years and come to Marksman. It's probably more relevant than coming when they first arrive. And for one other very good relevant reason today is Hebrew, is that the days of English-only jobs have almost died. Mm-hmm. That the average Israeli speaks relatively good Hebrew, very good Hebrew, very
not
often
English.
Sorry, mm-hmm. very good English. I'm sorry. Especially the commercial managers, they certainly can, and correspondence between an Israeli importer or exporter to somebody abroad, which is now done in pidgin English on email, is very successful. There's no need for the intervention of an English-only secretary, who might even complicate things, because the company in China or in Italy that's talking to the Israeli will understand his type of English easier than it would understand perhaps even my type of very proper, but
no flowery, no
subtleties, just this is the price, this is when it's coming,
the basics.
The very basics. So the need for basic English, so basically the jobs for English only have reduced. There's one exception, and that is the growing area in Israel for an online marketing customer service, mainly for gambling companies, of which there's a lot coming and living in Israel. It's illegal, I think, to have them based in some parts of Europe and some mm-hmm. parts of America. So a lot of them are moving to Israel, and there's a surprising amount. In addition to that, there's foreign exchange companies, who in my mind are very similar to gambling companies either. Now, the only reason I'm mentioning them is because, yes, those companies, when they only need English, they don't need Hebrew at all. And in addition to English, a lot of them require other foreign languages, European languages, French, German. Huge demand for German. Any German speaker that can breathe and has got a work permit will get a job in one of these centres. Regardless of their age, believe it or not, or regardless of their sex, or even where they live, they'll probably pay them a taxi to get there. Because the German economy seems to be at the moment very successful, and that seems to be a growing business. So I got to Asia House, and I specialised then in jobs that were particularly good for English speakers, which were in those days definitely English secretaries, telex operators, if any of you even know what the word is.
It's been a long time since I saw one.
Yeah, and shorthand typists, which is also a thing of the past. Dear Miss Smith, please take a letter. That seems to have, that's passed on as well, but that was the case, plus import-export clerks. That then developed into all the accountancy functions that require English, and there are a lot, and that's still a place.
Bookkeeping.
Bookkeeping plus accountancy and English speakers that have got qualifications from abroad and could deal, especially American tax accountants and American tax lawyers, are always going to be okay here. The strength of Jewish Anglo-Saxons, which is also perhaps a weakness in them finding a job, is that they're terribly talented. Most of the youngsters, and even older, I'll leave that come here, are have 1 degree or 2 degrees. Many have got MBAs, and they could do anything, and they really don't know what they want to do. They come here at ages when they're making a life change by coming here, and they didn't really have a profession in abroad, in America or Switzerland or wherever they come from. They come here terribly well qualified, some of them with more than one language, and they are totally confused as to what they want to do. And that's probably the biggest frustration that I have personally in, and have had for several years, in finding these people jobs. Because really, finding a job is not the most difficult thing. The most difficult thing is knowing what job you want. And I know people have left after an interview with me feeling rather depressed, even though there are 10 jobs that are available, because they haven't analysed themselves what they want. I've been an advocate for career guidance, and I even tried to convince Nefesh B'Nefesh, before they allowed anyone to come on Aliyah, that they should give them careers guidance advice. Not how to find a job, but what job they should do. Do they have a natural personality to be a salesman? Do they have a natural personality to be an accountant? Do they have a natural personality to be a man manager? Or are they the kind of person who only wants to sit in a corner and get on with their work and be a researcher? Are they people that are terribly creative and would be frustrated doing anything else that wasn't creative? I mean, I'm going through a whole range, but there are today professional career counsellors. There are professional psychometric testing that you could do, career psychometric online even. There's a whole range of things. But surely that is the start, especially if you're talking about people finish university at the age of about 25, 26, 28. And that's exactly the age when people need to know what is the career that would be best for them. Now, once you know what you want, finding it is not all that difficult nowadays. Once it was, but not with computers and job portals and things. Once you know what niche market you want to go into, and the biggest frustration, I would suggest, in finding a job for many Anglo-Saxons is the frustration of not knowing what kind of job you want. Recently, I was doing some voluntary career guidance for Ezra, and I did a bit for Nefesh B'Nefesh as well.
What's Ezra?
Ezra, the English-speaking Residents Association in Renana.
Okay.
Who also gave me a lot of, not so many new immigrants, but very old immigrants, basically. People over 40 or 50 or even 60. And even at that age, a lot of them were totally confused about what they wanted to do. They came to Israel, they've come to Israel, often following their families. They're not ready to totally retire, but they do want to do something. And they've never actually thought what they did. Mm-hmm. You know, most of them took over their father's shop and built it up, but they've never actually analysed themselves what they'd like to do. Mm-hmm. So that's an area. A lot of well-meaning organisations want to help new immigrants and promote Aliyah mm-hmm. by finding a job, because it's obviously the key factor. One day, finding education, finding the right house, finding the right kahila, the right organize, the right community to live in, was a crucial questions. Now, all that is relatively easy. The key thing is, where do you find the right job? Before you can find the right job, one step back is you have to know what is the right job for you. Not just generally.
And so what do you tell people when you see it's another, you scratch your head, another person who doesn't know what they want? So what do you tell someone like that, regardless of age?
Well, I do tend to give them a psychometric test. We have one that we've got the franchise for in Israel. And from that, we can help them discuss what is the areas. We ask them questions like, what kind of family professions are there? Because professions are often within the family. Mm-hmm. Sometimes doctors mm-hmm. produce doctors, and businessmen produce businessmen. Mm-hmm. Accountants often produce accountants. There are, of course, exceptions. Also, what is their hobbies? Because the happiest man is the man who could actually work. Like you're smiling. If you didn't have to make a living out of this, I think you could do it all day, doing something that you really enjoy doing. Can help people or can frustrate them, because they think, I came here applying for that job and that job and that job, and I said, well, look, I'll send you to them because you probably could do them, but would you get job satisfaction? How long would you stay there? And when somebody keeps moving from job to job to job, it's not always the employer's fault. It's not always the conditions. It's not always the salary. It's much more likely that they're in the actual wrong job. And it's difficult. It's not a very, what I'm saying is not a very commercial attitude, because I sometimes even fail to introduce people to jobs that they want to, because it's clear to them and to me. At the end of the day, you say, well, I know I'm not really suitable, but I still want to go and try. Okay, Beseder, I said, you can try, but don't, not on my conscience. My attitude, of course, is very non-commercial, because as a hard-headed businessman, I should really send anybody to any job that they want to, and probably not even interview them, because unfortunately that seems to be a trend nowadays, that because the speed of response time that people have now become used to getting from job sites and from other agencies is that they do it immediately. Somebody that's close to it is sent CVs, and these CVs are confetti to the client, and the client seems to be happy with it.
How has that changed over the years? So what was it like? When you're saying nowadays, what was it like, let's say, a few years ago?
A few years ago, we were probably used much more to do search and selection. It was more difficult to find good English speakers, and the whole time was different. The time scale was different. When we first opened, we used to get email, we used to get applications in handwritten letters through the post. We used to speak to the client. We couldn't even initially fax them. There were no faxes. Mm-hmm. We couldn't telex them. So we had to speak to them. And they wouldn't expect to see a candidate for at least 2 or 3 weeks after they phoned us up. The whole pace of life was different. But the beauty of that was that if they, in all this correspondence, in all this talking, we got a better idea of exactly what they wanted. So we were actually able to find them much more the kind of person that they wanted. So it was probably much more professional, believe it or not, in those days than it is today's when I use the word confettiing CVs is very much the norm. And that's what happens. And applicants do that as well. They need a job. They get a list of 300 employment agencies and they send their CV to every one of them. Some of them are stupid enough to actually show the employment agency that they've sent them to everyone, which is a real turn off for us, of course. It's changed and it's changing and it's changing. The good thing here is that all the talent that is arriving will, of course, be a tremendous advantage to the Israeli economy if they're just found the right niche. Perhaps one thing I think I've discovered is that nobody's going to be in the same profession necessarily for life. If you were to ask me what you should teach your children, I don't even know if you've got children, maybe, you know, oh, four, thank God, yes, I've got four as well. It's, first of all, mathematics, secondly, computer
literacy,
and third, English. And if at all possible, some sort of business concepts. Now, with those four skills, you could be a doctor, and you need to have skills to be a doctor as well. It's not just medicine. You could be a dentist, you could be an architect, you could be an accountant, you could be a teacher, you could be a headmaster. You could be everything except a Chaver Knesset, a member of Knesset, which needs particularly special skills, or none. And once you've got those skills, you can actually change your career. So it's not, if you've got the basic skills, and everything's computerized, you could be a architect, which they all work on computers now, it's not drawing out and having ideas is all computerized. You could be an architect. And then if you see a job or you're interested in and then becoming a job in finance, being a bank manager or analyst, it's conceivable. It's not inconceivable. Just because you've spent 10 years being an architect, there's no reason why you shouldn't be able to move. And that's got to be happening. That is happening. There are certain professions which require particular skills of personality. I suppose sales skills. Mm-hmm. To be a sales manager, to be able to motivate a marketing team or a team of sales managers, you tend to have a particular personality. Mm-hmm. And probably that is not the correct personality as an accountant, so you haven't really got that option. But there is a lot. In Israel, we will always have a lot of jobs where English is required because I understand 45% of our economy is based on exports. and a lot of them high-tech exports. And all high-tech exports require English, in as far as programming's done in English. And you've got all the supports, the marketing support, the sales support, the customer service support, the technical writing support, the MarCom, marketing communication support. All these skills are required in English and other European languages. Europe seems to be becoming a very strong partner of Israel in terms of trade. Politics is a different business, but in terms of trade, certainly. The trade with France has dramatically increased, almost in direct proportion to the number of French immigrants that have, I won't say fled to Israel, but have come willingly to Israel. And that can only be positive. I suppose in the computer world, it's not even worth saying that so many jobs now can be done online. Mm-hmm. So many jobs can be done online that we've had requests for doctors to work in Israel for hospitals in America to analyze, doctors that can read x-rays and mm-hmm. that kind of stuff.
Telemedicine,
yeah. That the doctors in the States will online show what's going on and discuss it with a specialist here in Israel for a relatively short period of time in order that the diagnosis is done correctly. Hmm. Now, big hospitals in America are short of people, and there's also time scale differences.
But here are working overnight.
Yeah, also working on Sunday, that I think in certain places in America, they pay double time for Sunday. Whereas they would need to pay double time in Israel to have someone working on Sunday. Doctors or anybody who's semi-retired, who's a specialist, can often get online. I'm saying it's not yet developed, right. But if you're asking me what the future will be, that will be. Mm-hmm. I have to say, in terms of recruitment even, the only reason that I can't work or my recruiters can't work from home is that we have to interview people.
Well, couldn't you interview people by a video conference?
We can interview people by video conference. And we when we've got clients abroad who are wanting applicants here, we use Skype, yes. which is free.
an amazing tool.
An amazing tool. And that's going to only develop. However, video conferences and Skype is not quite the same if you're wanting to do it, absolute. And the applicant wants to ask personal questions and things. Somehow the personal interview, and when you're dealing with senior jobs, of course, then that's the case. More and more jobs are going to be online. More and more jobs are going to be on job portals. More and more jobs are going to be on clients, that means employers, own websites. But employers will not put all their jobs on their websites.
And on that note, we'll take a little break. The interview that I conducted with Nat Gordon was in total about 68 minutes long, which is a bit long for one podcast. So I decided to split it into two parts. This was part one, and soon I will publish part two so that you can continue listening to the interesting stories that Nat had to tell and also the interesting insight that he had to share. If you'd like to learn more about Nat Gordon, some people confuse the name and call him Nat Marksman, but no, the name is Nat Gordon. His company is Marksman International Personnel, and you can find their website at www.marksman.co.il. And if you'd like to know or to hear from other experts and listen to other podcasts like this one, well, then it's the same address, jobmob.co.il/podcasts, podcasts. And I hope that you enjoyed this first part of the interview. And again, look forward to the next part soon. Thanks a lot. Talk to you soon.